Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, everybody. How are you today? This is Nicole, and welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. So love being with you guys every week. So we're going to have a really awesome personal conversation today with me, about me, but about you, because we are all the same. If there's anything I have learned in my 20 plus years of doing this work with other people, is that we are all the same. When we suffer the same. Our moments of hilarity and joy are the same. We might find different things sad or different things funny, but the feelings and the space we go to when we have big feelings is so ubiquitous for human beings. And so one thing I'm going to invite you to do during this episode is, if you don't relate personally to my story, don't feel the need to count yourself out. I definitely get some comments. I wouldn't say tremendous amount of comments, but some comments about that I talk a lot about parenting and having kids, and that, you know, some people feel alienated as a result of that. And the thing is, you know, I have three biological kids. I have two stepkids, and being a mom, as you're going to hear, because I don't know what's going to come out of me, but I know generally what I'm going to say. Being a mom is multi-layered for me. It's not just the day-to-day of being a parent or something like that. It's multi-layered. It is a thread that has gone through my whole life in terms of expectations and what kind of needs were going to be met in me in order to, quote-unquote, survive by having children and a lot of stuff. So it's a very big topic for me, but just because I'm expressing it through the lens of motherhood doesn't mean that if you are a person without children, that it doesn't apply to you. So listen carefully, listen to the subtext for where we all have big feelings and where our big feelings come out and need to be expressed so they don't express themselves through our physical bodies in some way, shape, or form. It's important, and it applies to everyone. So I'll say that. And before we get started, I just want to give a few housekeeping messages based on a lot of information I've been receiving. The first is, I've received a ton of emails from you guys about the Inner Child Retreats. I have two. I had one last weekend and one coming up on March 28th. They both sold out very quickly. At this moment, I don't have time to create a third, but a lot of people are asking to just buy the ticket for the recording. And I am open to doing that. So for the March 28th event, I have opened it up for ticket sales again, if you would like to sign up to purchase the recording. So go onto my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on either the retreats tab or the resources tab. And when you see the Inner Child event for March 28th, you can click on that and then you can purchase your ticket. It's open again, but know that at this point, ticket purchases will just be to purchase the recording. It's a 2-hour event. You will be able to keep it forever if you download it to your computer, and you'll be able to do the meditation over and over again and hear all the information and whatever comes of the event. The last one was amazing. So that is a response to a lot of people's specific requests for the recording. So check that out. And also, if you're interested in coming to a full weekend with me, really wanting to spend time with me and learn about all the stuff I teach, I have a virtual retreat coming up May 21st to the 23rd. Also find all that information on my website. Okay. So today we are going to talk about the topic of why we need to speak the unspeakable. And I don't understand enough about anthropology or history to know when in the human timeline it became unacceptable to say certain things. You know, it's a very complicated sociological discussion about political correctness and about politeness and about, you know, family dynamics that have led and societal dynamics that have led us to feel as if certain things we were able to say and certain things we were not able to say. And I think they differ from every culture and every family and every religion and it and different societies. So it's really, there's no one way to look at what is the unspeakable. It's really a specific thing for each of us. But what I've learned through studying mind-body medicine for many, many, many years in my own body, through thousands and thousands of you around the world with my colleagues, with all the continuing education I've done, brain science education I've done, that when a human being does not express themselves fully, which does not mean they have to express themselves to their parents or their partners or their kids or society, to themselves, when a human being lives in self-deception, that is just too much for the mind-body system to bear. That kind of betrayal of ourselves, and sometimes it's just an expressive betrayal. Like I said, it's not like if you're living a life that doesn't suit you, you have to change your life. But the fact that we cannot be open to fully and deeply and wholesomely knowing what's going on inside of us leads to so much physical illness you have no idea. And, you know, I know there is a great level of disbelief in society that mind-body medicine is as impactful as it is in terms of your physical health. I'm here to tell you, it's kind of like when people wear those t-shirts that say science, whether or not you believe in it, it's true. You know, I'm telling you right now from where I sit, and with a vast, vast experience of this, including so many experiences that can't be deniable because for me, because they happen in my own physical body, this is truth. This is truth that when we repress our emotional world, our fear, our sadness, our shame, our rage, our regret, our embarrassment, our resentments, when we repress enough of that throughout years, throughout our personalities, throughout our interactions with people in our daily lives, memories from childhood, you know, stored trauma, all the things, there reaches a tipping point where it cannot be repressed any longer and it must be vented somewhere. And it is the reason for the multitude of chronic conditions in our global culture, whether they be conditions like fibromyalgia or migraines, back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, knee pain, hip pain, foot pain, hand pain, carpal tunnel, regional pain disorders, pelvic disorders of all kinds, stomach issues of all kinds, skin issues of all kinds, the symptoms of autoimmune disease. These are ways that the body is expressing this emotional overload. It doesn't mean that this is psychological pain, and that's very important for people to understand. This is not psychological pain, and this is certainly not in your head, nor are you making it up or creating it. This is a physical, brain scientific reaction to an overload in one area of the mind-body system that is being expressed in another. It's a fluid system. Things, sensations, feelings move from mind to body and then from body to mind. For example, I often say this in lectures when I used to be able to do lectures to large halls of people, which soon we will be doing again. For example, I say often to people, what I am teaching you, you already believe. Who among us has not had a stressful day and gotten a headache? An emotional stimuli leading to a physical reaction. You don't think to yourself, I need an MRI of my brain when you lay in bed at 10 o'clock at night after the longest, most stressful day. You're exhausted. Your kids were this. Your partner was this. Your job was this. The car broke down. Whatever happened to you? And you have a splitting headache. You don't think that you have a brain tumor. You're like, man, I had a lot going on today. It really stressed me out and I got a headache. That you'll believe. But when you get a migraine disorder, and you're getting migraines several times a month, instead of looking at your emotional world, what do you do? And I'm not blaming you for this. I am so on your side because I was you before I was me. What do? You go try to get an injection or a pill or Botox or whatever the hell's going on these days for migraine, right? Now let's talk about heartache. Heartache. Your partner. The love that you thought was the love of your life cheats on you. What happened to your stomach? Did you lose your appetite? Did you feel sick? Did you get diarrhea? Did you throw up? Did you lay in bed with stomach pains? It's happened to all of us, no matter what the stimuli. We've all had stomach issues as a result of either bad news, sad news, horrible situations in our life, right? Now, when you had that situation, you didn't go for an upper GI or label yourself with irritable bowel disease. You said, dude, that was a blow in the stomach. That was a punch in the stomach, what that person did to me. And I am suffering and I'm grieving and I am having major lack of appetite. I cannot even bring myself to eat. Or conversely, I can't feel my feelings right now. I'm just going to eat everything, whatever it is. No one who is going through an incident like that thinks I have a diagnosis. They think I have an emotional stimuli that has led to a physical condition. This is truth, my loves. However, when something becomes chronic, all that understanding of the mind-body connection goes out the window and we start to feel as if a physical problem requires a physical solution, which is not going to help, which is why we live in a society of people who are constantly treating their physical bodies with physical solutions. So that would be surgery, medications, treatments, injections, diet changes, different, physical therapy manipulations. And I believe in medical science and I believe in physical therapy, but it through a certain lens, as fueled by love in conjunction with this work. But when people don't understand that it is truly the base of their problem is an emotional world, in the emotional world, in the world of trauma, in the world of feelings, in the world of being shut down, being silenced. That's the stimulus. We can deal with the treatment on many levels. I am not a hater of any specific treatment. There are a couple opioid pain medications and some surgeries, but for the most part, I am open. I am not such a strict person. I am a holistic person in that I see the whole person. And we must start seeing ourselves as whole people or we will never heal. Do you hear the passion in my voice? I get so super passionate when I'm talking about this because I see what has created my life. I see what is creating people's lives all the time. If this happens to be your first time to the podcast, go through my interviews. My God. What people are doing to turn around their lives, previously hopeless people are now completely hopeful. And not only hopeful, healed, living their full lives, doing things they could never have done, never thought they would do. It's insane. And that's available to you too. So understanding this is sort of the first, what I'm saying now is sort of the first step. But how then do you heal? So you may recall that there are three facets of my work: believe, do the work, and patience and kindness for yourself. So believe is what we've been covering for the past 10 minutes, just why indeed it is time for you to shake your proverbial etch-a-sketch with all those pictures on it of what it means to be sick and what it means to be well and what it means for something to be physical or something to be emotional. Shake that etch-a-sketch, get it clean, get that clean screen for me. And hear me, that if you come around to what I'm saying and you can at least suspend your disbelief, if that's the best you can do, but I would prefer you just say, screw it, I'm just going to try this with full belief. That sets the stage. That builds the foundation underneath you to do the work. So the main topic today is around the concept of doing the work. So let's talk a little bit about why it is imperative, why it is so healing, why it is transformative and life-changing to speak the unspeakable. And I'm going to share this with you through my story. Some of you have heard my story woven through many episodes of this podcast, so this may be a review for some of you, but it's important. It's important to highlight it because I've had, I tend to take my travels, my conversations and my travels, and right now I'm not doing physical travels, but my conversational travels, figuring out what people want to hear, what people need to hear. And I've been getting a lot of conversation in different things that I facilitate. I facilitate a women's group. I do things kind of all over the board of what we need to do to heal. And so many people are bringing up this concept of being brave enough and being understanding about the importance of speaking our truth to understand, you know, to want to know more about it, to want to know more about it and to want to go more deeply into this practice. So I thought this was an important conversation. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about me and about what happened in my life regarding having children. So I am currently 48. I'll be 49 this spring. And when I was a little girl growing up in the 70s and 80s, I was an only child. My parents were older when they had me, which is crazy because today it would have been not older. My mom, I think, was 32 the day I was born. But back then, that was older parents. They were rather serious people, you know, like a lot of New York Times and 60 Minutes and CNN. And like, that was all I knew. I was fine with it. I'm not criticizing that, but it was a kind of a chill, not a very childlike childhood in terms of like, there was no siblings, no big playroom, no chaos in my house. And so I would go to other people's houses that had a lot of siblings and a lot of chaos. And for whatever reason, you know, we always want what we don't have. That really appealed to me. I just loved the many kids and the warmth and the love and the connection. And I was a little bit lonely. You know, I always had friends, but we moved around a lot. And sometimes, depending on where we lived, I didn't have a lot of friends. And I said to myself at a very young age, maybe like 10, when I grow up, I'm going to have a bunch of kids. And I'm going to fill my home and my heart with this thing that I feel like I didn't get, which is totally normal. This is what we do in childhood, right? We fantasize. But the problem with some fantasies, and I can only speak for myself on this one, is they become everything. The energy and the power of the goal or the fantasy takes on a very big responsibility in one's life. And for me, it was, I'm going to have these kids and it's going to save me. And I'm using a little journal speak right now. I'm going to speak a bit in journal speak in this episode. And if you don't know what journal speak is, it's just a really sort of basic, brave, and bold, truthy language. And if you want to learn more about it, you know, certainly there's tons of places to learn more about my work. There's a whole episode on Journal Speak early on in this podcast, and I have a four-part series on YouTube called Healing Yourself Parts 1-4 that will take you through all of this if you're super new to this. But most of you guys are going to recognize the fact that I'm going to speak a bit in Journal Speak. So when I say that those children were going to save me, that was my truth. As a 10-year-old and maybe as a 14-year-old and maybe as a 21-year-old, you know, as I was starting to gain maturity and really have more agency in my own life, I was sure of this. And I think a lot of that surety, and I put that in quotes, was unconscious. I wasn't like sitting around thinking I'm going to have kids and they're going to save my heart. I was just living my life with that kind of more conscious intentions of, you know, looking for a husband and, you know, figuring out what my life was going to be. But now I know that the unconscious thread through this whole thing was, this is not just a choice, this is imperative, because my deep loneliness will only be solved when I have these beautiful babies who are going to love me so much and I'm going to love them. And how beautiful and how lovely and how naive, you know, that little unconscious voice that child inside can be. So I went through my life and, you know, did all the things. I went to undergrad and I got my psychology degree and I met David, who is now my ex-husband. And we set on a path, you know, that we were going to have this life. Now, we have to pause that story because there are two parallel stories that are important in this, which is that when I was 19, before I met David and I was in college, I had an acute pain incident where my back went out completely so catastrophically that I had to be removed from college, physically carried out by my parents, brought home, miss classes, and undergo all the tests to find out what was wrong with my back. And what was determined is I had a condition called acute degenerative spondylolisthesis, which meant that I would likely not have biological children. That was one of the things I was told at 19, that the weight of the baby, if I was to even try to do it, it would require almost the entire pregnancy of bed rest because of the danger it would pose to my very fragile spine. And once again, my whole story on this podcast, in my book, The Meaning of Truth, there's so many places to read this whole story if this interests you. But I somehow intuitively knew that that wasn't going to be my fate. I don't know how I knew that. That's where the journey becomes a bit spiritual for me. But I knew it somehow. And when I finally discovered Dr. Sarno and mind-body medicine and understood that that abnormality in my spine wasn't necessarily my fate, and I became open and into the world of mind-body medicine, I did give birth successfully and without pain and without any trauma to my first two children. I exercised until the day they were born, and I gave birth to them healthy, and it was great. So I had overcome that. I had overcome this catastrophic diagnosis that was I was told would limit my life forever. I was bold. I was brave. I had overcome. But see, I didn't know at the time that that unconscious thread of these children are going to save me from my depth of loneliness, which probably was the saddest part of my childhood. You know, if I look at my childhood, my parents had a turbulent marriage. We had tremendous issues with money. I had all the normal social things of a kid growing up. Plus, we moved several times. I had to keep reinventing myself. So I had, you know, whatever my bucket is, you know, that I have to lug around with me for the rest of my life. I had that. But in addition, I had a rather deep loneliness that could have been explained by any of those things I just told you, but I think it was just more part of who I am, right? Part of my my story, my makeup, my energy, my everything. And so I was harboring this deep loneliness, and I was unconsciously deciding, having no idea about this at the time, which is why Journal Speak is so beautiful, that it invites up the unconscious, that these children were here to complete me in a way that was absolutely not possible, but I didn't know that. So when I had, and I often say recovery is not a straight line, recovery is a beautiful and tragic and amazing and excruciating journey up the mountain in concentric circles, not straight from the bottom to the top. We traverse the mountain in concentric circles. And as we walk up and up and up and we spiral up the mountain, we will always be able to look down below us at the person we were, at the circle that was below, at that different time we went around the moon, if you will. And I have to say, you will always find yourself in a more awakened place when you do that, when you do this journey. And so it won't always become obvious immediately, but when I had my second real acute pain incident was after I had already had my first two children, and I thought I was free and clear. I understood mind-body medicine. I never did the work. I never knew I had to do the work. I was just young and naive or not understanding or not informed. And I was, once again, my back went out. And this time when my back went out, I was, I guess I was 30, 31. I went completely panicked because I thought, wow, I thought all that mind-body medicine was the way, but I guess I did it this time. And then the shame just rushed in. I really did it this time. Look what I did. I fucked it up. I took it too far. I had these babies. I'm too physical. And now my back is really destroyed. And now my life is really destroyed. And that pain incident sent me into a year of the worst chronic pain of my life, the worst depression of my life, and the worst despair. And I was a terrible mother. I was angry and impatient. I needed help all the time, which made me crazy. I don't know about you, but asking for help is not my fave. It was awful. It was awful. I had two children. They were less than 2 years apart. And here I am, a basically disabled mother in a difficult marriage, in a stressful life. So here we are. And I found my point of surrender, my point of desperation. One day, I was in a deli with my kids. We had finished eating. It was sort of a sit-down deli. And then you paid the bill up at the counter. And so I gather the kids in the diaper bag and my delicate self, and I walked over to pay the bill. And the two kids are like 1.5 and 3.5, and they're going hog wild. Oh, my kids. They're very spirited. Isn't that the lovely way to say kids that are wild? My kids were very spirited. Now they're freaking so great. They're such amazing teenagers. But back then, they were challenging. They were a bit spirited. And they were grabbing at like those very purposely placed gummy worms and chocolate covered pretzels and everything delicious and enticing in those clear plastic containers at the eye level of a four-year-old that they place at the place where you pay at the counter of delis like this. And so they're picking them up. Can I have this? Can I have that? And they're shaking them and they're running around and they're laughing. And I'm mortified. I'm out of control. I'm alone. I'm scared. I'm sad. But I don't know any of those things. All I know is my children are out of control and everyone's looking at me. So I somehow get it together to pay and wrench all these things out of their little hands and grab them by the wrists, and we start walking to the car. And as we're walking to the car, I feel my back tensing up, and I feel it getting worse and worse, and I feel the muscles spasming, and I know that this is just really, really bad. Things are happening right now that are really bad, really dangerous, actually. So I get to the car. And I have the diaper bag over my shoulder. I have a child's hand or wrist in either hand. And I realize there's no way I can move. I am in searing pain. My whole back feels like it's locked up. And I am terrified. And it is a really active parking lot I'm in. If I let go of one of their wrists for 1 second, they could be dead instantly because they had absolutely no sense of danger. And I stood in that parking lot and I put my head on the window of the driver's side of my car and I freaking sobbed. I sobbed for my poor, beautiful children and their ruined life because of their terrible failure of a mother. And like I said, all journals speak, but I sobbed. I didn't know why I was crying. I just knew I was stuck. I couldn't get my phone in my hand if I tried. I couldn't get the keys to my car if I tried. And my children stood there with me. And eventually they kind of just went limp the way kids do sometimes, where they just have an intuition that there's nothing else to do. And I have no idea to this day how long we stood there. But we stood there till I somehow got myself together. And I got them in the car and I drove home, and like a robot, I got them in the bath and I got them in the bed. And this was at a time in my life where my husband at the time never came home from work until after the kids were asleep. So I was on my own and I got them to bed. And I remember walking into my bedroom and sitting on my bed, and the window outside across from my bed was this large window that just looked out onto our backyard, which had a lot of trees in it. And the sky was just black and the stars were so bright. And I looked out into the sky and the stars and I surrendered. And I said, mess with me, don't mess with my kids. I don't know if Dr. Sarno's work on all this mind-body stuff is the way, or all this stuff I've been doing to myself for the past year, which had been therapeutic massage, electric stim treatments on my back, muscle relaxers, steroids, opioid pain medications, everything you can imagine I had done for the past year, all the physical stuff. I said, I don't know what the answer is. And I'm so scared and I'm so confused, but I don't fucking care anymore. I surrender. I am desperate. I'm on my knees. I'll do anything. And there it was. My point of surrender, my point of desperation, my point of, it was the moment my life would change forever. And I made an appointment to go into New York City and see Dr. Sarno in person because I had read his book, but I hadn't ever been to a TMS doctor. And I only wanted to see him. And it was ridiculously expensive because he was, first of all, a best-selling author and certainly a global hero. But he was also a person who was working in the medical field where no referrals ever came to him from his colleagues. And so he had to charge a lot of money in order to make a living because it was only referral. He couldn't even take insurance because people weren't referring to him because they didn't believe him. They believed in surgery. They believed in pills. They did not believe that there could possibly be a mind-body solution to physical pain. So I went in and I saw him. And he explained to me everything I'm explaining to you, everything I learned from him, and he ended up being my dear, dear colleague and friend for years until his death. And he explained to me what I needed to do. And what he explained to me was that we live in a mind-body system. And sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies, like I explained to you earlier. And that when there's too much built up in the emotional world, it will be expressed through the body, sometimes through excruciating and life-stopping fashion. It is an amazing phenomenon of the brain in which the brain and the nervous system seek to protect us from our emotional world that feels like it will kill us. This is hardcore brain science that's going on. And he explained it to me and I got it. And he said, one of the great tools you can use is you can journal, because when you journal, you get a lot of this stuff out. You invite up this unconscious, the unconscious, and the unconscious is where most of this repression lives. You don't know it day to day how you feel. You just think you feel stressed out or you're overwhelmed, like all the words we use, right? I'm like super stressed, or everything is too much, or I have too much on my plate, or my kids, or my husband, or my wife, or my dog, or, you know, we know that, but we don't know the deeper stuff, and the deeper stuff is what's keeping us sick. So he explained to me that journaling might be a good idea. So, you know, I go through the whole thing and I understand what he's saying. I really get it. My belief becomes solid. And so I go home and I decide I'm going to, and you guys got to understand, I am like the most annoying A student my whole life. I mean, I was bullied for it. I always had my hand up. You know, I'm a nerd. And so I was like, I'm going to do this and do it well and do it with passion and I will do it right and I will heal myself. You know, just not always the best energy. It's a little bit too perfectionistic. It's a little bit too much expectations in terms of like, I don't know. You get my point. I don't know. You might be like this too. So I was set upon the task of doing this journaling. And so I remember the first thing he said, which I teach, by the way, in all of my basic stuff. If you are really hearing this and saying, I want to do this for myself, I have an online course called Freedom from Chronic Pain that takes you through this from soup to nuts, takes you through the entire process and how to learn how to do it, because this is going to be just obviously one podcast. But I understood that I had to make my three lists: childhood, daily life, and personality. I made my lists. And then I went through all the lists and I put the bullet at the top of the page and I started to write. And I was doing this for some of my childhood, like the more memorable childhood traumas. And I was writing out and I was like kind of playing my tapes and telling my story. And it felt true, but I certainly wasn't feeling any huge shift. And I was still confused as I was like, how is this going to cure my back pain? Like, this makes no sense, but it made sense, but like, it didn't feel like I was doing it right. Or it didn't feel like I was getting to what could be needing to be gotten to. So, but I didn't judge it and I didn't stop. Guys, I didn't stop. I just kept going. A lot of the language I have now, a lot of the beautiful growth that has happened to me over the years, I didn't have the language for it then, but it was happening through me anyway. I don't know why, you know, this is like I said, this is why it's also a spiritual journey, because what forces are in my energy that kept me going, I don't know. But they were, and I didn't stop. And I kept taking topics, bullet points from my lists, and I kept journaling about them. And I would be telling these stories, telling stories I've told to myself a million times. You know, that time my dad made me rip up my essay because it had too many cliches in it and stood over me with his pointing finger and his angry judgment as I rewrote it in sixth grade. It was a terrible memory for me. So shameful. But I know that story and I was telling the story, you know. So moving on, different topics. And motherhood. It's just on my list. I am a mother, you know. It's a lot of energy in my life. Motherhood. I put it at the top of the page and I started to write. And I'm writing the things that if you are a mother or if you aren't a mother, you can imagine from the stories you've heard or the TV shows you've watched what it is to be a mother, the things. I am exhausted. I am worried about this thing or that thing. I am overwhelmed. I miss my old life. I miss having a life. I miss having my sleep. I miss not feeling worried all the time. Whatever. I'm telling the truth. These things are the truth. Of course, if I felt them, they were the truth. And I sat there with that legal paper. I had this big yellow legal pad and my pen. And something happened to me as I was doing this motherhood journaling exercise. I got this voice. You know, you have some voice, like, not schizophrenic, but I do hear my own higher voice sometimes. And it said to me, "You are lying." And I said, "What? No, I'm not. I feel all those things. Those things are true for me." And it said, "Yeah, maybe. But that's not what you need to know to heal." And I said, "Okay." And I just sat there and I kept writing. I never stopped writing because you have to just let your pen keep moving on the page or your fingers keep moving on the keyboard because you're inviting in this unconscious, these feelings to rise. And the thing is, while you're inviting them, you don't know what's coming and you don't know that you're inviting them. So you just have to keep going. And as I kept going, what happened was something started coming up. And trust me, when these big ugly truths start coming up, you don't want them. They start knocking at the door and you go, "Go away." But it kept coming and it kept coming. And the sentence that came, the first line of journal speak ever penned, came up through my unconscious and said, "I hate being a mother." Oh my God, you should understand the depth of that sentence. Whoa, did that pack meaning for me. This started when I was 10. Motherhood was all I wanted. At the time, I didn't think I'd ever even have a career. I just wanted to be a mom. It's all I ever wanted. And now I hated it. It was wrong for me. And now started coming up. This is journal speak, guys. Just go with it. Not only do I hate being a mother, I'm terrible at it. I'm in pain all the time. I'm grumpy and horrible. I also married the wrong husband because he's never around. I'm lost. I'm trapped. My kids are the wrong kids. They're too energetic. My daughter looks like my ex-husband. She doesn't look like me. She's cranky. She doesn't sleep. This isn't what I asked for. And then, as I opened those floodgates, I had to let them come. And they started coming. Not only is this not what I asked for, my life is ruined because these kids are not going to save me. And wow, did that start me understanding what had really been festering in there. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wasn't afraid and I told the truth over and over and over again because it didn't stay with the kids. As soon as I started realizing that, is it motherhood I hate? Do I hate my children? And this is the beauty of journal speak. It keeps evolving. You give it permission and it wants to tell. It wants to tell so badly. It's been quiet for so long and it wants to tell. And it said, "No. It's not the kids. You don't hate motherhood. Oh, do you love your babies? What is it? What is it?" What do you hate, Nicole? And it was, I hate my parents. Fuck them. They made all these mistakes. They made all these bad choices. They created a life where I had to fantasize about having children save my heart. And I went through my parents, and then the compassion came, and I said, oh God, I don't hate my parents. I really see my parents. Listen, we all have fucked up stories. My parents were what they were, you know, they had their own journey. I don't hate my parents. And then probably the deepest one I needed to feel. Know what, Nicole? I hate you. And I hated myself. You weakling. Why can't you just do this? You can't be a mom. Everybody can do it. You've been wanting this since you were a kid. You can't hack it. And I went through, I hate myself. And when I tell you that I came out of this experience, this one particular experience, and not every experience is like this, guys, but I came out of this one with such tremendous compassion for my beautiful, wild-hearted babies, for my parents who had their own journeys and honestly were amazing in many, many ways. So the ways they weren't amazing, that was what happened. For myself and my beautiful, broken, hopeful, loving, tender, damaged self. And I looked around. I don't know how much time had gone by. This whole 20-minute journaling thing that I assigned to you is just because I've come up with it over the years that it's a good amount and that people won't reject it. But that might have taken me hours. I don't remember because I really, really, really let it flow. I was in acute pain the whole time. Acute. Could barely breathe. I woke up the next morning and my back pain was 80% gone, never to return. Within the next month or two, I spoke to Dr. Sarno a couple times. I explained to him what times of the day. I still have back pain in the morning, Dr. Sarno. When I go to tie my shoes, he goes, oh, don't worry about it. It's just brain conditioning. Your brain will let it go as you give it no meaning, as you give it no mind. And it did. Within a couple months, the pain that had owned me, that had defined me since I was 19 or younger, has never returned. My MRI still makes orthopedic surgeons go pale. It is severe. My spondylolisthesis, I have a vertebrae that is shattered and replaced with scar tissue. My other vertebrae look like they're sitting on top of each other. I don't know. I don't think I even have a disc there. I'm not a doctor. All I know is every doctor has ever seen it is like, oh, that's a bad one. They can't believe I'm not in a wheelchair yet. I'm 49 years old almost. I bike 30 miles a day. I carry my kids' heavy suitcases up and down the stairs. My kids jump into my arms. My 13-year-old, she's like probably almost 100 pounds at this point and still on a regular basis because we love it. I open my arms and she jumps into my arms and we dance around the room. I can do anything with love, with brilliance. Why? Because I'm not scared, because I understand why I was in pain. I understand that I was being protected from an ugly truth that wasn't even true. But my unconscious doesn't know what's true and what's not true until you dig around in there and you let it have some air. You shine the light in the darkest places. That's the way this works. Here's another thing I want to say. Had I parented these three children, because I ended up having a third, of course, through the lens of my unconscious pain, I can promise you they wouldn't be the people they are today, and I wouldn't have the relationship that I do with them today. I have an incredible relationship with my kids, and I don't say it to brag. I say it because it's true, and I say it because it's one of the great sources of joy and pride in my life that these kids are my heart. And why are they my heart? Not because they're perfect. Trust me. And not because they're easy. Trust me. Because I have parented them for them and not to heal myself through them and not to define myself through them and not to work out my shit through them. And I got that gift when my youngest were 1 and 3. What a gift. If there's anything I rejoice about, it is that gift. So this is not a story about parenting, and this is not a story about me. This is a story about you and all of us, because this is a story about figuring out what's going on inside in order to heal the whole thing. The whole thing. Physical pain is just an entry point. It's the biggest, littlest part. It gets you here. You're probably here because of it, or emotional pain, or anxiety disorders, or depression, or chronic fatigue, or whatever. You know, discomfort in your body is probably why you're here. However, that's just the entry point. Our physical issues bring us to the precipice of the truths that have been awaiting our acknowledgement. And it is everything. And it is for you. No matter who you are, it's for you. So this might be a story about me and parenting and my childhood, but it is a story about you and your life and your childhood and your memories or non-memories and your relationships or your breakups. It's about your heart. It's about your little inner child. It's about what needs to be heard. This is about you. And this is a gift for you because you can do it. And the third facet of my work is patience and kindness for yourself. So once you believe and you do the work as I assign, you have to sit in patience and kindness for yourself. I wrote my Freedom from Chronic Pain course before I used to, before I now assign 10 minutes of loving kindness meditation at the end of the practice. So right now the assignment that I give people on a daily basis is a 30-minute total practice, 20 minutes of journal speak followed by 10 minutes of loving kindness meditation. And the reason I've added the meditation is because we need to say really unthinkable things in our journal speak sometimes. We need to say things that will make us feel bad. We need to admit how we feel about people and things and ourselves. We need to tell the truth in ways that sounds different than the regular truth you've told before, and it can make you feel bad. It's temporary, I promise, but it can make you feel bad, and so you have to come back to you, hand to heart. I'm okay. I'm just human. I'm doing my best here. That's what we can do for ourselves. I can't tell you how I feel when I talk about this stuff to you guys. My whole body courses with such gratitude. I have tears in my eyes the whole time. My joy is enormous. And, you know, that's why my passion will be for the rest of my living days to bring this message to the global community, because we need to hear it. Whatever afflicts you, and now we can add COVID long haul to that list, you have the power to heal yourself. You have so much more power than you realize to heal yourself, because what we're talking about here is truth. I love you. I honor you. I believe in you. Go do it. Go take back your life. Until next time, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.